evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 401 of the Chamberlain Chance and Alex podcast. No Mount Rushmore games tonight, but I'm sure we will find plenty of things to talk about. I hope.
Disagree about,
fight about, something.
Play
like
some
that.
Cards about.
You
play some cards about.
Okay, what's the name of that stupid looking game?
How do you pronounce
Balatro
that game?
Balatro is what I'm choosing to go with.
The Balatro?
No, it's a B with a B. Balatro.
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 Okay. Hey, you can, Balatro.
The creator doesn't really know what it's pronounced. He says the most famous one will win. It's looking like
excellent.
Balatro for now.
Okay. So what makes this game
what
interesting?
What is this?
It is a multiplication puzzle game that looks like solitaire and feels like heroin. You basically just make, you're dealt a hand of cards. You try to make poker hands with it, you know, flushes, straights, sequential cards, face cards, all the hands you do in poker, and try to get an exponentially larger pile of chips to beat rounds and get money and buy stuff in the store. The stuff you buy in the store are going to be jokers. Jokers affect the rules of the game in ways that are like every even numbered card gives you a little extra like multiplier. If you discard a certain number of clubs, you'll get bonus chips every hand you play. It just keeps just feeding into itself over and over to the point where like you've gone from a 300 chip blind to beat to a 2200 chip blind to beat. For some reason, the 2200 chip blind was easier than the other one because of all the jokers you have. It is your really crazy runs fail just as often as the bad ones. There's usually some piece of strategy you missed about the jokers you have. Sometimes it just feels like you got a bad hand, but most of the time it feels like your fault. And I sunk 10 hours into it like it was nothing. Like it was nothing.
Are jokers wild?
Hmm?
Are jokers wild?
Jokers are kind of like, they're like rings in Elden Ring. They kind of just change the rules, and you're trying to combine them in different ways. I was 8 hours in before I realized the order of the jokers affects how it affects your outcome. Like, you have need your multipliers at the end, your chip bonuses at the beginning, so they multiply into each other. I had no idea. That's how I lost so many runs. It hurt.
But now you know.
The game didn't explain that shit?
No.
Okay.
But, yeah. Like, it does a better job explaining other things. But that was like, it's like, I kept getting stuck in, like, the 7th of 8th blinds. Like, I was, like, on like the second final boss before I realized I needed to do that stuff. Like, it lets you get deep into it. And I've only beaten one deck. There are 22 different decks. They all feel wildly different to play. No run feels like the last run. There are 50 jokers I've never seen. I've only got, like, 80 out of 150. I have barely begun to play this game. It is $15, and it is nuts.
90% on Metacritic.
I love that there's
33,000 people are playing it on Steam right now.
I love that there's space in this industry for something like that. I honestly do. Out of nowhere, here's a card-based roguelike. Enjoy.
By one guy.
Yeah. That's so good.
And it rules.
Steam Deck, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
It is like the perfect pre-bed game.
10 hours, you stop sleeping. Jeez.
I mean, it wasn't consecutively 10 hours, but you know, you whip it out when you have a 20-minute break, and then you blink and it's gone.
Yeah, it made it out on console too, but it doesn't feel like a console game. It feels
it's
like something
not.
That needs it could be on a
Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Is it on Switch? Because that's kind of
it is
ideal.
On Switch.
Here you go.
I'm seriously considering just giving it to Laura because I think she'd love it.
Yeah, there's a demo for Unicorn Overlord out apparently, which is the next Vanillaware game, and I want to love anything Vanillaware does, but I looked at like a battle tutorial on YouTube that was like part of the game, like this is the battle tutorial in the game, and the mass gameplay takes place in menus. Mm-hmm. Where you, like, you know, you move this unit down here, and then you move this unit over here, and then do a special move or something like that, and then this unit engages that unit. And then it zooms into those big, beautiful Vanillaware sprites that I know and love. And then it lost me when it said, battles proceed automatically. And I'm like, fucking what?
It's an auto-battler.
It's an auto battler where you set up gambits beforehand, basically. Like you say, like you use this move as a second priority, but only against an enemy who's low on health or something like that. You set all that shit up beforehand, like Final Fantasy XII, and then it runs itself. And I'm out. I'm fucking out. Like, I don't... People are saying the demo is really good and will turn you around on it. I can't...
You're like, no, I want to push buttons and watch things move.
Yeah, I want to make choices.
As God intended.
Yes, I want to make choices in battle. And the idea of, like, a turn-based vanillaware RPG sounds awesome, but that's not what this is. This is something else. This is like a high-end tactics game, and I'm like, no, I'm not into that.
That's two in a row they've done that I've been like, what are you thinking? 13 Sentinels and now this.
Yeah, yeah.
We all just want Dragon's Crown 2. Just do that.
Well, you can't have it.
God, I know, apparently
Dragon's
they got
Crown
like...
on modern hardware. Just, oh, imagine that.
There's a the Dragon's Crown, what is it? Dragon's Crown Pro, I think they called it. It's 4K, pretty sure.
Oh, man.
PS4 version, yeah. Let me double check on that.
I wonder if making something like Dragon's Crown just takes so much extra time and money because of how much animation there is in it. And something like Unicorn Overlord or 13 Sentinels is obviously less expensive because you spend so much time staring at text menus.
Yeah, but it looks like there's a lot of different units in Unicorn Overlord. But yeah, Dragon's Crown Pro is 4K. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on, Vanillaware.
I jump into Dragon's Crown once in a while.
I'm sure it's still awesome.
It is. It's solid still. I watched some movies this week. let me bring up my notes. Okay, Freelance is on Netflix. Okay. John Cena was an ex-Special Forces guy who quit the Army to go back to being a lawyer because he got married. But he's really, really bored being a lawyer. And his wife has kicked him out of the house because he encouraged his daughter to stand up to a bully. It doesn't make any fucking sense. And so he is hired by his old war buddy Christian Slater to, okay, it's Allison Brie is the brunette from Community, Alex?
Yes.
Okay, so she is a reporter, and she's going back to the country where his entire squad was massacred. They were going to kill the autocratic leader of this country. And it turns into, like, an action caper where they land, a coup immediately begins, and now John Cena basically has to protect this president that he actually wants to kill, while also protecting Allison Brie. While Allison Brie is walking around half naked half the time, throwing herself at him, like lifting up her shirt to show this tattoo just under her breast. Like, whoa, this woman looks amazing. And of course he has to turn it down because he's such a good guy. but we're here kind of for the comedy and the action. The comedy is okay. It's really solid. John Cena is great. Allison Brie is great. The guy playing the president is really solid. The action is pretty terrible.
Oh.
I stopped it midway, and this is, I think I'm going to say, I don't want to say something. I looked up who the director was because I was like, this is someone who really doesn't understand the why of action. This is one of those action movies where a bunch of people are just shooting at each other, and some guys fall down sometimes, but nothing really changes until this other character is introduced to the scene, and then all the bad guys start falling back. And, like, that's the kind of action movie it is. Like, there are chases in this that feel like all the events that occur are not connected to each other at all. This movie doesn't get action at all. So I'd go 2 stars. I'm really thrilled with it.
Such a waste of John Cena. Come on.
I wouldn't say that. Okay, I watched The Holdovers, which is like one of those.
I love Holdovers.
To me, The Holdovers was another Dead Poets Society kind of movie. Like, as a white person, I'm attracted to this world. But
I'd say it was way bleaker than that.
It is, but it's also about this kind of idealized white person in America life of going to this, like, upper-class school and kind of being a poor little rich boy, but you're so special if only someone can see it. And of course, the grumpy old professor eventually does see it and really connects with this young man. Like, I knew where the plot was going. What I was really surprised was, who's the woman who plays the cook?
Oh, yeah, her. Oh, God, she was in Dolomite Is My Name, too. She's really fucking good.
I think she's getting some awards for this, because I kept on seeing her face pop up talking about awards. I'm like, I have no idea who this chick is. Then I saw the holdovers. Great. She's fantastic. She's absolutely fantastic.
Her best scene, she says nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, she's
complimentary.
It's a powerful and a very, very human and subtle and honest performance. I really, really liked her. She was the most interesting kind of surprise in the movie. Like, overall, as a film, really well made, good script. No complaints really in any direction. It just, beyond her presence and the existence of her character, it didn't really surprise me at all. Then I watched Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a horror movie. Mm-hmm. I think it was directed by
Eli Roth.
It was directed by Eli Roth, and I've always kind of stayed away from Eli Roth shit because he did Hostel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to see that. This is a classic slasher in the I Know What You Did Last Summer vein, but I don't remember what that movie was. What was the movie where the person was put through a bread slicer head first?
What?
Yeah, Thanksgiving has kills like that in it, and I described one to my horror movie friend earlier today, actually, where it's ridiculous like this: the killer shows up in a restaurant after closing time, and attacks the woman who works there. The fight goes on like in the kitchen, and he grabs her head and jams her into a full sink, pulls her out soaking wet, and then presses her face against a freezer door.
Oh.
For some reason, the outside of this freezer door is so cold that her face sticks to it as he goes and fetches an axe, and then she, like, tears the skin from her face to get off the freezer door and runs out into the parking lot. Now, picture a dumpster, like any dumpster you've ever seen, where, you know, it has that lid that folds up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the woman is crawling into the front of the dumpster, and the lid is open. Her feet are well above the car that's about to impact the dumpster. The killer drives the car into the dumpster, causing the lid to close. Now, on no dumpster I have ever seen in my entire life would that produce the amount of force necessary to cut a person in half, but in Thanksgiving, that's what happens. And all the kills are kind of that ridiculous and crazy in Thanksgiving. They're all kind of goofy, silly, that wouldn't actually happen fun, but it is fun. My brother really enjoyed it, spent the entire movie trying to figure out who the killer was. At no point does the movie give you any information that would lead you to believe that the killer is the killer. The killer is unveiled in the final minutes and gives information that no character in the movie knew or was aware of, and that's why the killer is doing this. So, like, as a story, it's stupid. The writing is not as good as, like, a Scream or I Know What You Did Last Summer, but it has that same kind of youthful, silly slasher energy. So it was fun. It was fun. It was, like, a good solid 3 stars I'd give Thanksgiving.
And silly gory, not torture gory.
Yes, that's silly gory, not torture gory. There is a table saw put to good use at one point. At one point, someone goes into an oven, but just before he closes the door, he sticks a thermometer into them and then walks away. And the person dies, and the thermometer pops. They're done. It's silly. See.
It's you know what his next movie is?
What's his next movie?
Borderlands.
Eli Roth directed Borderlands?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Loins are girded.
That just says it'll probably not have a very good script based off this movie.
Probably not.
Probably. Well, and what do you really want for a Borderlands thing?
I want Guardians of the Galaxy. I want something wacky and funny and solid good action. And the director,
you can only have two of those things.
The director of Freelance couldn't pull that off. But at least the sequence of kind of combat within Thanksgiving made cinematic sense. Like, it shows you, like, they do this, then they do this, then they do this, then we push that way. Like, it made more... The physicality of the action in Thanksgiving made way more sense than the physicality of the action in Freelance.
someone actually mapped it out, so it made sense when you thought about it.
Yes.
More or less.
Fuck, a helicopter chases them for like 15 minutes. It's the dumbest shit.
I mean, that's just Uncharted.
But yeah. A little bit. Got a train at the same time? Come on.
A little bit. So what is Chamberlain playing this week?
I finished up Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, and okay. It maintained its quality all the way through. It was very, very good. Great big silly boss fight at the end where the evil prince turns into this big giant demon thing. Took a couple tries, but it was a good time. Had a solid plot resolution. The powers that be that started the whole thing are, you know, held to account. And then I forgot his name now. The main character, Sargon. Sargon just kind of walks away into the distance and says, I'm done with all you people. And, you know, stars in the next game. So it was, I didn't even come close to 100%ing it. It was probably like 85, maybe 90 by the time I was done. Lots of stuff out there that I didn't find. But it just maintained its quality the entire way through, which not all Metroidvanias do. So I was still quite pleased with it. Was that? Yeah. Still expensive. It's still expensive.
Yes.
It has not gotten cheaper yet.
Oh, yeah, and you tried Helldivers but didn't like it.
Yeah, I did try Helldivers, and I didn't like it at all. Because it's not for me. Because I do not play video games with other people.
Did you even try? Did you even, do a quick play game? Because, yeah, that's where it shines, man. No. When, like, four people are on a map, and waves of bugs are coming at you, and explosions are going off in all directions because, like, guys are bringing in airstrikes and mini-nukes and shit, and the horizon just lit up with flames and screaming bugs. Like, you didn't get that experience at all.
No, because I'm not looking for that in a communal way. I want that by myself. And it just, the game doesn't work by yourself. It's not balanced that way. It's not... It's just not there.
I mean, it was okay. I could play up to hard on my own, on solo.
I don't know.
I've seen people do the hardest difficulty solo.
I got ambushed by bugs from behind so many times. I'm like, this is not, it's not a good time. And then because I was trying to not buy anything big or play anything of substance because of something else that just came out, I picked up a small indie 8-bit game called Lords of Exile, which is basically just Castlevania except you have a sword. Okay. And they did their homework because it feels 8-bit in all the cheap ways.
Oh.
Where there are enemies who hit you out of the air and you're falling just a way that you land in the pit of spikes. Or you're trying to jump over one enemy and another enemy comes out and hits you at just the right time. Where it's, you know, it's intentional. Like this, it feels like a refugee from the NES. It really does. But because it is not an evil game, it doesn't have limited lives, and there are checkpoints throughout the levels. There's only 8 levels, but there's at least 2 or 3 checkpoints in each of the levels. So it is old school hard, but with modern, you know, okay, you're not going to kill yourself trying to do this game kind of a thing. It does not look or play as good as, remember those circle, when Bloodstained came out, they released a couple like 8-bit versions of Bloodstained.
Oh.
Yeah, there was a... This is the Game Boy version that came out before it.
Yeah, there was one of them was a pre-order bonus for Bloodstained, and it was so good they made another one. Those were way better than this was. They're just, the art was better, the sound was better, the combat was better. But for like $15, which this was pretty good. The problem is that, as you would expect, the final boss is bullshit. It's a 2-stage boss. You have to go through the first stage every time to fight the second stage. And it does so much damage that it took me forever to learn the patterns. And then even after I learned them, you have to just repeat the pattern so many times that I have yet to actually beat the last guy.
Yeah.
It's sitting in a game state right now where I can go back to it. It should be right there. But I spent like 20 minutes on it. I'm like, this is not... I don't need to do this. I've seen all that the game has to show me. It was a cheap time. Not bad. Lords of Exile, if you're jonesing for an 8-bit kind of a thing, it's right there. And the reason I didn't want to play anything big is because Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out technically today.
Hmm.
It is currently installed.
Ooh.
I haven't played
it. So wait, now is this a GameFly game, or did you actually buy this?
I own this. I bought it.
You spent money on this. Okay.
I spent money on the last one, because I want to encourage this kind of nonsense. This kind of like, it's not even a remake. It's just using the same characters and kind of doing more stuff with them. This is fine. I haven't even booted it up, though. I will say that the download size is obscene.
What is it? It's like 150?
156 gig.
Well, I should hope it'll be a very good-looking game, then.
That's approaching Call of Duty nonsense. I mean, that's as big as Forza Horizon 5. It's huge.
I haven't launched the Digital Foundry.
Baldur's Gate is like 5 gigabytes smaller than that.
That's a lot of voice acting.
Baldur's Gate is that big.
God, Baldur's Gate's about 147 right now.
Well, maybe on PC.
Lots of uncompressed textures. So, no, it is installed. I have not touched it yet. I've had to avoid significant portions of the internet because I don't want anything spoiled for me. I want to go into this completely blind. And that's the project now for probably the next couple of weeks. Because it's supposed to be significantly longer than the last game, which is good news.
Well, apparently it's longer because of, like, limitless busy work. Like, and side
it's a Final Fantasy game. I would not expect any less.
It's just tons of mini-games. Tons and tons and tons of mini-games.
Well, we'll see if they're actually enjoyable or not. If they are, cool. If not, I'll skip them and move on to other things. That's the plan.
I got to level 20 in Helldivers. And
what does that entail?
Level 20 unlocks the ability to purchase certain items. One of them is the Orbital Railgun Strike, which most times you throw out when you call in a strike, you throw out a grenade. Or like what happens is you pull out a grenade, kind of like Dread, where he pulls out this little grenade and looks at this computer on his arm. And as you punch in the up, down, left, right, one, down, 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 whatever you need to do, your guy punches that into his arm, and then the grenade he's holding lights up red if it's a orbital strike or a support aircraft that's always flying you around that can also do strikes. It'll glow red if you're about to throw one of those, and it'll glow blue if you're throwing in a support weapon or something like that. And most strikes, you throw it out, and then this red beam shoots up from wherever the grenade landed. And the strike will generally, like, it'll be a carpet bomb that poof, goes across the area with where the beam was in the very middle of that area. But a railgun strike, you throw it out, and a beam comes down from the heavens to target whatever happens to be the largest enemy unit in the vicinity. And then... it gets hit with an orbital railgun shot. And so this is something that will instantly take out. With the bugs, like their tank unit is called a charger. It's this giant thing that you really don't have the tools to deal with unless you get lucky prior to level 20. You've got a bunch of shit that can kind of help. Like if you want to unload an entire flamethrower canister on it, that'll kill it. You really don't have much else that will strip the armor off it. But if you have the railgun strike, you can one-shot it. If you have the railgun support weapon, this is a little handheld railgun, you have 20 shots with it. Just 20. And you have to reload it between every shot. But that reload is fairly fast. So if this charger is coming at you, what you can do is you can bring up your railgun, charge a shot into the leg, and it'll stop its charge. Charge up a shot into the leg, and now the armor is all stripped off that leg. And then you just switch to, like, your primary assault rifle and put half a clip into that particular leg, and the thing is dead. Mm. It makes a huge fucking difference. What was the other one? Oh, yeah, the other one is a mortar that fires EMP rounds, and an EMP will stun anything in the area it's hit. So if you're doing a defensive mission, you can have an EMP mortar, and these things will fire on enemies, like, 150 yards away. You can bring up an EMP mortar and a mortar, and it'll keep enemies super far away and just obliterate them all because they get stunned and then they get exploded. It's beautiful. And so I was really enjoying that, and I did a bunch of hard difficulty missions, and I kept on doing the destroy the Bile Titan, because the Bile Titan is this colossal bug that is probably like It's probably like 100 feet tall. And I would go into hard missions with a bunch of other guys, and they would all be like running around doing the side stuff, and I would just run straight for the Bile Titan because my entire kit is about taking that thing out. And I would see it, I would call in the orbital railgun, damage it a little bit, and then I would just bring up my railgun and put maybe 3 shots into its head and kill it. And then just go back to my team. Mission objective complete. Let's see what else we want to do in the area, boys. It was really, really good. But then I did one level harder than hard. And we got like 75% of the way through it. And then my PS5 shut itself down.
Oh.
What? Uh-oh.
And turned back on in repair mode. And oh, I'm like, shit. I think I'll let him do a couple more patches before I go back to Helldivers. So I started a new character in Elden Ring. And I have never gotten... I started a Faith build once, and he didn't get out of the Irony of the Lakes. I yeah, started Faith a magic... Really
fucking blows. I can
attest. No, because you get all this cool madness magic, and that's the stuff I really like. I love the madness stuff, and some of it was very high damage.
Is a mage build actually workable?
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
All ranged stuff, like, you know.
But there's different kind of mages. There's faith magic users. There's intelligence magic users. There's arcane. A lot of arcane comes with blood magic in Elden Ring. There are certain melee builds that focus heavily into arcane because any bleed you apply is increased if you're based on your arcane stat.
And where does one find spells? Are spells just in the environment, you pick them as you leap up. You pick up
scrolls and tomes.
You pick up scrolls. You give them sometimes
to a giant turtle. He teaches you magic.
Sometimes there will be like a little glowing scarab on the ground, and that thing will have a spell in it. Sometimes you kill a boss, you get a spell, or a mini boss, you get a spell. There are various magic users who will teach you spells for a price. There's all kinds of ways to get spells. Like, you end up with way too many spells, and you only have a limited number of spell slots. That's what I hate about magic in the Souls games, is what you have is you have up, down, left, right on the D-pad, okay? Left and right swap out whatever is in your primary weapon or your alternate weapon slot. So you switch your shield for this other weapon, you switch this primary weapon for this other weapon, whatever. Down is stuff like throwing knives or buffs for yourself. Up switches your spell. So what up does is it rotates through this list of could be 10 different spells.
Oh, jeez.
And that's how you go and, like, you go up, 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 and then you hit square to cast the spell.
It's really not worth your time to have more than, like, 5 slots.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really kind of hate that aspect of casting in the Souls games.
Sounds like a radial menu would help from there. Come on. Hold up and choose it.
It would.
They sure don't want to put that in there.
No, they don't. So I made a katana build, basically just dexterity. I have hit points, I invest in my hit points, I invest in my endurance, which is my stamina bar and my ability to equip stuff, and dexterity, that's it. And I'm just using the katana that, I forget what the class is even called, samurai, it might just be called samurai.
Samurai.
Yeah, I'm just using that base katana, because turns out, stat-wise, in terms of going off your dexterity and getting higher attack power, it's actually the best katana in the game. I could get
what about Yura, Corpse Piler?
There's Yura. Okay, Corpse Piler is the weapon art of Rivers of Blood.
That's it.
Rivers of Blood I could give myself, but it's been nerfed heavily, first of all. Second, It's okay, but what's amazing about it is that weapon art where you just go up to a boss and chunk the boss's health off, which I really don't want to do. I want to fight these bosses. I don't want to cheese them. I want to fight them with katanas. And so the question would be, would I still have fun struggling through with a build and a playstyle that I haven't done in a... I really haven't done in a Souls game ever. I was sword and board up until Dark Souls 2, where I switched to a greatsword. And then I was greatsword for the rest of Dark Souls 2. I was greatsword for Bloodborne. I was greatsword for Dark Souls 3. and definitely Elden Ring. I was dual wielding great swords in Elden Ring.
Two great swords, yeah.
Yes. I just finished my great sword run, and you're right. You just make everybody shut up. No, shut up. I'm going to slam this thing in the ground, and all of you are going to stop attacking me.
And it's going to interrupt whatever the fuck you're doing. Yeah, it makes everything way, way, way easier. And absolutely, I miss it. But at the same time, there's something intensely satisfying about going in for a combo with these dual katanas. Because I've got two Uchi katanas. You can pick up the katana that the samurai starts with relatively early in the game. So I just have two of them. And the weapon art that comes base with the katana is called Unsheathe. And you hold down R2, and then he sheathes his katana. And then if you tap R1, he brings it out whoosh, with this leaping forward horizontal strike that does a good chunk of damage. Or if you hit R2, he jumps forward with a vertical strike that will usually stagger almost anything. It'll interrupt a bunch of attacks. So it ends up giving me the tools to kind of use the best parts of a heavy build when I want to. When I really want to stagger something, I can. I just have to be planning for it. And otherwise, I'm dodging everything. I'm just using I'm medium weight, and so I'm using a medium roll.
You're made of glass.
I'm made of as much glass as I ever was on the great swords, but the great swords' defense was that they would all constantly interrupt you on every single attack. And there were a bunch of enemies that are, I don't want to say immune to pierce, but if you try to just swing a one-handed attack at them, you'll just bounce off them.
Oh yeah,
like any of the guys in the mines. So, but all I have to do is two-handed basically, and do charge two-handed attacks, and I'm fine. So what it's resulted in is I'm getting to relearn Elden Ring again through kind of a different perspective of gameplay, and
the bosses have a lot more to say.
The only one that's given me trouble that I actually summoned someone in for was, remember in Rhea Lucaria, you're kind of going up towards the end, and there's this knight between you and the boss?
Oh, he fucking sucks.
And that, okay, so what that knight can do is he can...
If you block him, he'll, when he blocks you and you hit him while he's blocking the shield, he can just one-hit you.
Yeah, He will parry whatever you do. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's one of those cool and cheap attacks.
It's automatic. It drives you nuts.
He will parry it 100%. And then, once he's parried it, you're left open and he one-shots you. I could not do it. I just could not do it. I summoned in someone who looked like they had a hacker's name. I have no idea what it was. But they were naked with one great sword.
Yeah.
That was all this person was. And I was like, yeah, this will work. And we just ran in, destroyed him, then we ran to the boss's room, destroyed the boss, and I'm like, okay, Liurnia of the Lakes is done, what's next? So now I'm in Caelid, and I'm like halfway done with Caelid. I just got to the castle where I'm going to fight Radahn, and I think I'll be okay.
Philosophical question, and this has always bothered me about how these games work, when you're calling somebody else in.
Mm-hmm.
For a game that is ostensibly about overcoming challenge, Why is it so quick to allow you to pull help in?
Because it's incredibly challenging and it wants to give you the opportunity to overcome something that is problematic for your build. And I'm sure there are people who are admitting weakness
in design because they've designed bosses that cannot be beat by some of their own builds?
No, they can absolutely. True. Like that guy could have been beaten by me if I wanted to do it another 50 times. I don't. I want to have fun. And the only thing that kind of stopped me a little bit was I got through the first underground section where, like, there's those guys shooting, like, the glowing arrows at you, Alex. Remember what I'm talking about? Yeah, yeah. And that ends with an elevator that goes up, and if you go down the path through that elevator, it's the only way you can get to this point. There's a gigantic jar warrior at the end of it. And he says nothing, but if you try to talk to him, three summon signs will appear behind him. Those summons are based on players in the world. And if you can beat three of them, you'll get to the Great Jar's arsenal, which massively increases your carry weight. It's a really good charm to have. And I decided to do that, but these guys that were getting summoned in were like 50 levels above me. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it at all. And at that point, I put the game down, went back to Helldivers, experienced that that crash, right back to Elden Ring. Okay, I'll just do something else. I'll go see if I can take down the boss in Liurnia. And I did. And I'm sure I could have beaten that the boss without that guy's help. I just needed him for that mini-boss, because that guy's a bastard.
Anything besides fancy cards, Alex?
No, I'm Elden Ring 2. I have never beaten a plus two in any Souls game, and I'm getting pretty far.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I basically ran from Limgrave to the capital, killed Morgott again, and it hasn't been really putting up much of a fight. I have plus 25 and two different greatswords. One's a little faster than the other, and it's all I needed. That 50 strength, 30 in intelligence, and ice magic on my sword.
Oh.
It's working out. Kills everything.
30 in int. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, cold is good. As soon as I got the glintstone wet blade from Rey Lucaria, I changed my katanas to cold. And it's great. It's absolutely, they still do bleed buildup, but they also do frost buildup, and that's massive.
Yeah, like there's like usually one with magic, but there's a lot of magic resistance in Elden Ring and almost no cold resistance.
Yes. And it's good in PvP, too. Well, I mean, not greatswords. Greatswords fucking suck for PvP, I'll tell you that.
Every time I make a boss go cold, I know I won.
Yeah, yeah. Because once an enemy is... Okay, first of all, Chamberlain. So you slowly build up this cold effect by, you know, whacking some guy repeatedly with a cold weapon. But yeah. Then once cold takes effect, it takes off a chunk of their life. Mm-hmm. And they, like... glow with frost for a little bit. While they're glowing with frost, all your attacks do like an additional 30% damage, it seems like. It is a massive increase. The trinkets I've got on my dual wield katana guy right now, one of them increases if I attack and then attack again. So like just doing a two-handed attack, I think it's 6% more damage, then 12% more damage, then 18% more damage on this one charm. The other charm I have is 5% more damage, then 10% more damage, then 15% more damage, and they do combine and stack together. They don't cancel each other out. So it's like this red effect that appears on my character as soon as the first two strikes connect. It's really, really satisfying. It's super satisfying.
What charms are you using?
Oh, I'd have to look it up. It's...
I never take my turtleneck off.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and you want to, because the turtle charm, Chamberlain, increases the speed at which your stamina recovers.
Okay.
But I've just kind of gotten used to not using it. Like, I never used it on Stormveil Angel. I think I used it on my first character. But I just kind of got used to not using it. And so one of them is Millicent's prosthetic. Like, that girl that you find in the church... in the Crimson Blight area. If you kill her at any point, you get the prosthetic. And in one of my playthroughs, I accidentally killed her. So I gave that trinket to this character. And the other one is... God, I forget what it's called. But it's like a corrupted blade charm or something like that. Yeah, or blighted something or other. And a blighted winged charm or something like that. And the two of them do the exact same thing, but the prosthetic does it slightly less than the blighted winged charm. But combined, yeah, they massively increase my attack power as long as I do successive attacks. Like, you have to do an attack within, like, 1.5 seconds of the other. So it's not great for great swords, but it's awesome for small, quick weapons.
Ooh, and did you get the that one from that snail boss that like, gives you health for successive attacks?
No.
Yeah.
No, but what I want to be using is, and I have it on the character. I've already gotten the thing, the one that when you kill a guy, you get magic, you get some of your focus back.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Because these quick draw attacks are wicked. Like, they're really the best thing in my arsenal. And if I just decide to use them on a character, that character is going to go down pretty fast, but it does burn through focus really fast. I put like an extra 10 points into focus just because I wanted to be able to use it a bit more. And really, for the most part, I don't run out. Like, when I go into a dungeon, I'll probably use half my focus bar by the time I get to the boss. I'll walk into the room, use some focus to summon my jellyfish in, and then pop one of two flasks I have to refill my focus. And then I still got another one to use if I run out of focus halfway through the boss fight. So I haven't had a problem with focus, but I wish I could use it more freely.
I've been trying to switch up my summons, too. I use Mimic Tear too much.
Well, Mimic Tear is... You use Mimic Tear because Mimic Tear is fucking awesome.
It is.
It really is.
Two ice great swords. What's not to love?
Yeah, and I know it's been nerfed to hell, but it doesn't fucking matter when you have a good build. Like, having a character in with all your cool shit is still fucking awesome. The only, Go ahead.
Yeah, did the Elden Beast get, three times more health? It seemed way harder this time.
Not that I'm aware of.
Crazy, because I actually struggle with him with the greatsword build, and that didn't seem right.
Yeah, I remember not having much problem with him. Did you do you have Bloodhound Step?
I did, yeah.
Okay, Bloodhound Step has been repeatedly nerfed, so that wouldn't be as effective as it was the first time I played Elden Ring. But as you've done everything else with Bloodhound Step, I can't imagine that would be any worse. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the only downside of the katanas is the range, and apparently if I use Yura's sword, I think it's called the Nagiatana or something like that. It has plus 50% of the range of the Uchi Katana, but it's not quite as good in terms of stats. So if I keep on pouring stats, money, or points into dex, eventually the Uchi Katana will always be deal a little bit more damage.
Those pesky soft caps.
Yep. Does that mean it's time for headlines?
I would love
have
some.
Have you seen what Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is sitting at on Metacritic right now?
It's 90-something.
What is it?
92. That's
pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty good.
People seem to like it.
I have high hopes.
You know, I
wasn't
think...
crazy impressed with the remake, but it's fine. It was fine. It was good.
I think I might enjoy it, but I'm almost positive I'm going to enjoy Dragon's Dogma 2. So I'm saving myself.
Yeah, I understand making that decision.
I am saving
based on what you're playing
further.
Now.
Yeah. Headlines. In entertainment news, filming on the second season of Amazon's Lord of the Rings series has wrapped. Season 3 is underway, and the production company just signed a 3-year deal with Amazon.
I tried watching that first season. I got bored.
I loved that first season. I love all the characters in that first season. That first season is awesome, and you're a poo-poo head for not liking it.
That's fine. I'll take it.
Have
I watched
you watched Shogun yet?
No, but I watched a crazy fucking action anime last night.
Oh.
Ninja Kamui. Kamui. There's 3 episodes up on Adult Swim on Amazon right now. When the action pops off in this show, it is some of the craziest, awesomest, bloodiest, most violent, visually spectacular anime action I've ever fucking seen. Like, it is really cool. I just turned it on and I wonder what this is last night. And I just watched the first fight and I'm like, okay, I'm watching this. And then I fast forwarded through maybe a third of the episode because it was this guy with his family and clearly a tragedy is about to befall this family. So let's just fast forward through this place where the guy sits down with his son with a guitar and sings the theme song of the show. And, it goes very slow when the action isn't occurring, but once the action pops off, holy flurking snit. It is absolutely spectacular. Ninja Kamui. How many episodes of Shogun are up? Just one, I assume?
First two are up. They are both very, very good.
I'm pretty sure
the lead actor is doing a really strong Tom Hardy impression, and once you see it, it's kind of hard not to see it.
Well, I don't like Tom Hardy. They should have just gotten Tom Hardy.
It's pretty obvious who the first call was.
Yeah, I should watch it. Read that book.
What is that on? Is that Amazon? Is that
it's on FX/Hulu.
Okay. And in Canada, I believe it's Disney Plus. Let me double check.
I'm looking forward to the next episode. I haven't felt that way for a show in a long time.
Half hour, hour episodes?
Hour.
Should be an hour. Mm-hmm.
Almost the majority in spoken Japanese.
It's on Disney Plus in Canada, listener.
It's the show Marco Polo wanted to be.
Well,
like,
we'll
I actually care about Feudal Japan. I wanted to care about Mongolia, but no.
There's this part of me that just wants to spoil it for everyone. This character dies, that character doesn't. And you want that character to die. I hope you want Yabu to die.
Yeah, this is second in command that did that fake bandit raid. He's, I love him, but he's going to die.
In Overwatch news, there is no news in Overwatch. No Overwatch news. There was a DDoS attack this week. Yeah, that's pretty much what we'd
say. Yeah.
Pentiment, for some reason, runs at 120 frames per second on PS5, while the Series X version runs at an unacceptable 60. And if there's one game you need running at max frames, it's Pentiment.
Pentiment could run at 12 frames and be fine.
Yeah, Xbox players are all pissed off about this. I'm like, first of all, who noticed?
Who cares?
Second, who cares?
It's You're not Pentiment. Playing Pentiment. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no, nobody's playing Pentiment. Okay.
No, people are playing Pentiment. Just not either of us, and that annoys Alex because he loves
that,
it so
that
much.
That is also
good
true.
Mystery. It's worth your time.
Yeah, but if I want to read a mystery, there are books.
Yeah, but it's also just about interviewing townsfolk, and that's also, you know, really nice.
Okay.
It's about sitting down and having lunch with gentlefolk.
Gearbox Entertainment is set to leave the Embracer Group. Pitchford has told employees in the past that the three possibilities are staying with Embracer, being purchased by an external company, or financing a buyout to go back to being independent. Word is lately they are being sold to another company, and that should happen very quickly.
I mean,
that's fine.
Borderlands not Sony. Makes capital M money. They're going to be fine.
Embracer
as long as it's
is
not EA.
I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay
no,
with the
EA
okay
closes studios.
Yeah, but okay. Did you love any of the most recent Borderlands? I know Alex did, but
yeah.
You, Chamberlain,
mechanically, yeah, they're still really
worthwhile. Borderlands 3 mechanically was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. But would you be really sad if you never played another Borderlands game again?
Yes.
No, I know. We know you would. I'm asking him.
Honestly,
I'm probably
not. My heart belongs to Doom sequels and nonsense like that. So it's which I'm gonna get. So,
Embracer is also selling Saber Interactive, who are working on that Knights of the Old Republic remake, to quote a group of private investors for $500 million.
Why does Embracer need money? What do they do? That's weird.
They spent all their money buying studios for the past 5 years.
They thought they could make the line go up forever, and nope.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
Electronic Arts laid off 5% of its workforce, about 670 people this week. They also canceled Respawn Star Wars Mandalorian first-person shooter. Boo!
Boo,
EA! Everyone
just
wanted
that.
It's just
a license to print money. What the fuck?
Yeah, and what they said was that people are really interested in Respawn's current properties, which is, there was one other, and the Jedi series, Jedi Survivor. And
I
want a sequel. I want a sequel to Jedi, but yeah, man, a first-person Star Wars shooter on current fucking gen, and you took that away? Fuck you, whoever made that decision. We all wanted that game.
Yeah, no, we did. That would have been awesome.
Like this is cherries. Cherries are great. We would also like a meatball sub. Why can't we have a meatball sub?
We can have meatball subs and cherries, and then we would be happy. Briefly. Until, you know, until
the game ends,
because
it wouldn't
back
be long enough.
Close your
the
eyes.
Hollow Knight hasn't come out yet. Rockstar Games.
Yeah, who's counting?
Rockstar Games is demanding all of its employees return to the office 5 days a week in what its employees are calling a transparent forced layoff for folks working remotely.
It's always layoffs. I don't want to say the word, but they're doing it.
Yeah, and it was Rockstar recently that was talking about how, no, they have no plans for layoffs because they build their teams really, really slowly and really consciously of avoiding shit like that.
Boy, I sure hope somebody with a good lawyer with a disability doesn't, you know, start asking loud questions.
Yeah.
Well, man, I wouldn't want to go up against Rockstar's lawyers.
Yeah, neither
Rockstar's,
would I.
Yeah, like, Rockstar's lawyers would beat the shit out of me.
And then charge you for it.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, Sony announced a record quarter for PlayStation sales and revenue. They have
That's
never done
news.
Better than they did last quarter.
That's amazing.
Everyone must suffer.
This week, Sony announced that they are laying off 900 people across PlayStation Studios. London Studio will be closed. Layoffs will hit Insomniac, Naughty Dog, and Guerrilla. Guerrilla lost 40 people. And Insomniac, Naughty Dog, and Guerrilla made hits for these guys.
Uh-huh.
Sony also canceled the Twisted Metal Live Service game that was in development at Firesprite.
Nobody cares.
I'll pretend to be upset about that.
Yeah, that's not.
You know what? Okay, if someone could just make a Twisted Metal game that plays like Mario Kart but looks like a current gen Wipeout. Wipeout?
Yeah.
No, not Wipeout. Burnout. Remember the crashes in Burnout?
Burnout.
Give me current gen spectacular crashes like Burnout with car combat. That sounds fucking cool, man. I'd at least look at that. Yeah, whatever. Canceled.
Yeah, where's the great arcadey kart racer of our time?
It's still Mario Kart 8. Yeah.
That's a 15-year-old game.
Yeah, it's ancient. Yep.
The total game industry layoffs so far in 2024 are over 8,100 people.
God.
What year did Mario Kart 8 come out?
Mario Kart 8 came out in the Wii U.
Yeah, it was in the Wii U.
Originally.
Do you know the year?
Yeah. Google 20... will tell me. May 29, 2014.
10 years old.
Oh.
In March.
Well, yeah. In May it'll be 10 years.
Jesus.
That's
and still terrifying. The best.
It is still the best.
I mean, yeah, it just kept adding on itself for a decade. It just stopped adding new characters.
And tracks, yeah. They were doing DLC for it.
And finally, Helldivers managed to get through the last weekend without server load issues. Congratulations, Arrowhead, you did it.
Yeah, all right.
They raised the cap to 700,000, as I recall.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that when I played it, I had no problem getting into anything, so that wasn't an issue.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm trying to find...
Lord knows I would not have put up with that either. I'm not waiting in line to play a video game, what the hell? That's why I stopped going to amusement parks.
10% of Guerrilla. Oh, yeah. The other one that I didn't put in the headlines, but God, we're running a little quick today. Remedy Entertainment bought the rights for the Control series from 505 Games for 17 million euros. So now they own, I think they must own Max Payne because they're making those...
The remakes.
They bought back Alan Wake from Microsoft, and now they bought Control, so they own all of their own IP again, I think.
Okay. I would love some more Control, please.
Yeah, give me Control too.
Yeah, I believe that's still in the proof of concept phase.
Fuck.
They put too much money into fucking Alan Wake 2, man.
Fucking.
Everybody loved it, but you guys. I never played it.
Well, then you didn't love it either, did you?
I didn't love it, but I have not had the chance to love it.
You won't. It's a baffling ordeal. Go nuts.
Yeah,
I'm not. I spent my credit card reward points on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm out of money at the moment
for call.
Things like that. I know I'll like that. I can predict it with reasonable certainty that I'll be chuffed next week with it.
Yeah, my credit card company is reminding me to cash in my points lately. I probably should do that.
You save yours for like a whole year, don't you?
Yeah, but I thought I did it like last November or something in preparation for Christmas. So yeah, I'll probably just leave them and keep on working on it for another year.
Yeah, I looked down. I'm like, well, I got like $130 on there. I'm like, well, I bought some other stupid things. We'll just cash all that in, buy Final Fantasy, call it even. So, done.
Yeah, I'm curious about Rebirth, but not that curious. Not $100 curious. I got a lot to keep me busy until Dragon's Dogma comes out.
Did you play the first Dragon's Dogma?
No, that's the thing. I really hope I like Dragon's Dogma 2 because I'm really just buying it on the description of the gameplay.
Yeah,
I started
Dragon's Dogma and played it for 2 hours like 8 times.
All right. Okay, well, what
it
stops
is
you?
It is a prickly customer. It is a lot of running around empty hallways and dungeons. Just a lot of that.
Well, I do love running around empty hallways and dungeons.
But you get to... It's got that, like, Shadow of the Colossus clinging thing to monsters.
Yeah.
It is neat. It is dry.
Well, okay, but the thing is, I saw... what really kind of, for some reason, hyped me for Dragon's Dogma was I saw someone comparing the Whirlwind spell in this most recent Hogwarts game. To the Whirlwind spell you could cast as a high-level mage in Dragon's Dogma. And the spell in Dragon's Dogma on the PS3 looked fucking incredible. Just, like, sweeping across the battlefield, all these atmospheric effects going up, picking up, like, a small army of orcs and tossing them around in the air. And then, like, it just looked amazing. It looked like you just unleashed the fury of nature on your enemies. It looked so fucking cool. And just the description of how, I want to say, simmy Dragon's Dogma is, like, we are simulating what it would be like to try to be alive in a wilderness like this, where nothing connects these towns except carts that are dragged along by horses. That sounds neat to me. Like, I want to explore that world in the same way I loved exploring Tears of the Kingdom, you know? But Tears of the Kingdom was a lot more user-friendly, I'm sure.
Doesn't try to kill you quite as often.
No. So yeah, I'm not booking off time for it, but I'll definitely get it, I think. Unless a bunch of, like, early access reviews are like, no, it's so bad and it crashes constantly. It turned my PlayStation into an Xbox. I'm like, no.
Is Dragon's Dogma Capcom?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm.
So Capcom Cup was this weekend.
Oh.
The first $1 million prize. And it was won by a player from that no one had ever heard of before. A completely new face on the scene, at least in around these neck of the woods. His name is Yuma, U-M-A, with Jury.
Oh, wow.
Jury won Capcom Cup.
Now, and he was of course, using the pajama. Or Japan?
No, Yuma is from neither. I think he's Korean.
Okay, sorry, Jury pajama? What?
Everybody got a new costume, and Jury's was a very suggestive pajama costume with, like, zip down to her crotch, and he used that the entire time. Because, of course, and because it's Jury.
She's wearing undies underneath.
But I just, of all the characters to come out on top, Jury is the one that did it, so that's funny. And then they released a new character. So
what's the new character?
It's Ed. Basically, rumor has it that's where Bison went after he died. He's kind of in Ed now.
Okay, I'm just going to say that this Jury skin is less revealing than her default skin.
I suppose, but...
It is. There's no supposing about it.
Well, I don't know. Jury has a legion of very, very ardent fan people.
Yeah,
entirely on her feet. So it's the internet.
There's a lot of feet people out there. What's weird to me is the feet thing seems to be uniquely male.
Yes.
I've never seen that from a female perspective where they're like,
men's feet are gross in general.
I gotta get that guy's feet inside me.
Nah.
Like, that's never happened.
I haven't seen it.
No, never. But there's a bunch of guys that look at some person's feet and it goes like, it was that Dave Chappelle bit. There's no flag for us. there are guys who look at a person's feet and go, man, I need those on my genitals. Where does that come from?
I'll tell you part of where it's from is that in general, the fair sex is pleasing to look at, and men are gross.
True.
And I would bet many women will agree to that statement.
Yeah.
It's just that women are nicer to look at.
First of all, there's not much of an industry dedicated to beauty products for men, and there's not a culture that surrounds us daily that reminds us that our value is implicitly tied to our appearance.
Because we are unsavable. No,
no. I think it's the remnants of institutionalized patriarchy dating back hundreds upon hundreds of years.
You're not wrong, but it also, you know,
that's a cute skin.
Makes me feel better about my ugliness. So it's kind of
It's nice that our ugliness is generally socially acceptable.
This is
no
true.
No one expects too much of a guy.
Yeah, it's much easier to be a homely dude or very plain dude.
Or just a regular person as a dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You could be a 5 as a dude. You're doing okay. So, anyway.
Although that might just be our perception based on media and how people are presented in media. It might be, the truth might be, that just normal people wandering around the world concern themselves less with us than it would, less with that than it would seem. Mm. But a number of female comics lead me to believe that might not be the case, that it might be way harder for women.
Yeah.
There's always a female stand-up who talks about how much work this woman in the front row put into her appearance to go out for tonight. And you, sir, you came in wearing a baseball cap and a sweatshirt. What are you doing? Are those sweatpants? Are you wearing sweatpants out for a date? What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. That happens repeatedly.
It's easy crowd work because it's 100% there every time.
Yeah.
You can use the same lines night after night and they still get a laugh.
Because it's still true.
Yeah. And the guy goes home and gets none. And that's just how it works. So.
Oh, which reminds me, I haven't watched it yet. Okay, I don't remember the guy's name, but you remember the sound. I'm rich, biatch! That guy from Chappelle's Show. That guy has a new stand-up set on Netflix today.
I like that guy.
Yeah, I like him too. He seems like a
cool guy. He's the mummy in that monster sketch.
Netflix. I put it on my list. Let me see if I can find it.
We should at least put a name on this guy before we're done.
Yes, yeah, we should. Too.
Oh, The Gentleman starts March 7th. I can't wait for that.
I got tickets for Dune 2 Saturday.
Okay. Is it still 3.5 hours long?
Yeah.
Donnell Rawlings.
All right.
Donnell Rawlings. Okay, so remember how the lady who was in the most recent Mission Impossible movies, the older lady... She's like in her 40s or something. Remember how she was saying recently that she got screamed at on set and she would never work with that person again?
Mm-hmm.
And she like... You know who it turns out that person was?
Was it Jake Gyllenhaal?
Timothy Chalamet.
Oh.
Oh, that little bastard. Really?
Timothy Chalamet on the set of Dune 2, apparently. That's what I'm hearing on Reddit.
I like that theory. He seems like a bit of an enfant terrible.
Well... It's nice to have something come out about him that isn't adorable, you know? He's just like a screaming little prick. This is my movie, blah, 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 and you're fucking it up with your middle-aged woman energy.
Oldness, yeah! I haven't watched the first one yet, because it's what? Isn't the first one 3 hours long? 3-plus hours about. Long?
God, it didn't good, feel though. That long. It was okay.
It clips.
Yeah, I'll watch the second one.
I'll watch when the first one again right now.
I do it 9 times, all right.
No. No, it's... Oh, man. Oh. Freaking, who plays his dad? Oscar Isaac's so good.
Yeah, I mean, the whole cast is solid. They got a lot of really big names in the cast.
Is this going to 3 movies, though? Is that what I heard?
I believe so.
It's going to be a real bummer of a 3rd movie. Wake me up when we get to God Emperor.
Yeah, the original movie never got that far, I don't think.
Apparently the book is Sting like some kind of that. Transcendent experience. Like, apparently the book is like some real metaphysical open your mind.
Its dialogue made me want to tear my hair up.
Okay.
It is less than eloquent.
Yeah, if any book is trying to make a point, but eventually they get to a "This is John Galt" or "I am John Galt" speech, I'm like, no, you're not a good writer.
It's not that. It's just like 1-to-1. Oh, okay, we're just doing Roman Empire, but space. But also psychic powers. Like, what if a Roman emperor was psychic? It was basically, what was the Greek myth of the woman who? You know, the future, but no one believed her. You know what I'm talking about.
Fuck yeah, I know what you're talking about. Forget her name.
But yeah, it has interesting turns in that, like, somewhat like Paul's child becomes a sandworm and functionally immortal, and even like an all-knowing god will still run a brutal society. There's no escape from it. That's honestly an interesting point to make. Dialogue sucks.
Cassandra was a figure in Greek mythology who could foretell the future, but her curse was no one believed her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Did Kratos kill her? No.
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 I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I will have Final Fantasy for you next week. Dragon's Dog was a couple weeks off yet, isn't it?
Yes, it's like 22nd, I think.
March. Oh, yeah, that's a ways off. Okay. Okay. We're almost March already. Jeez. I wish it would just get warm down here already.
Yeah, March was it.
The weather refuses to...
Sooner than you think.
Yeah, I know. All right, so... Okay. In that case, Alex, thank you for being here.
Always.
Chance, thank you for talking.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you in a week.